Get rid of the minutes from December 8th. Are there any additions, deletions, or corrections to the minutes? Is there any additions? Second.
Clear.
And just a reminder to the new year, please state your name for the record when you make your motion. That way it's better for the audio devices. Okay. Motion and second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Staff reports. First, the financial progress report. Mr. Baker.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So we still have our financial progress report from November 30th. Unfortunately, with the year end and some IT issues, we don't have our December billing completed yet to report. That hopefully is going to be resolved in time for the policy committee. But as you can see, we're still well within budget. We're almost about the halfway mark. So we're in good financial standing. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Are there any questions?
Dave White, move to approve.
Motion made. It's second.
Jim McCleary, second.
Motion second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Next is technical progress report. Mr. Baker.
All right. Thank you again. The only thing really to report on, it hasn't, you know, well, I guess a lot has happened on the federal scene since our last meeting in December. But as many of you know, and I think we knew this at the last meeting, Elaine Chao had been nominated to be the transportation secretary. There has been a lot of discussion regarding infrastructure, either has the word stimulus hasn't come up, but infrastructure spending. There's a lot of, it seems like right now through the nomination process, heartburn in terms of, is this going to be a almost a primarily private funded sort of plan or scheme, or is it going to be, it still involve federal, kind of the public federal spending, like through the gas tax and through our programs. So far through a lot of the nomination discussions, some of the nominees have said that they don't want to, that the private side is not the be-all, end-all, and that they still anticipate with infrastructure funding being an important, being the public expenditure being an important part of the infrastructure funding. So I think for us, that's good. There was a meeting at NEFCO earlier in the week, and I believe someone from Stark County, this was just I got as a tidbit, had been contacted from someone in the Trump administration saying, hey, what are your big projects, or what do you have? So there is some rumor that there's some scuttlebutt over, you know, is there a possibility potentially for us to find a, for us to have a different way to finance possibly some of our larger scale projects. So I would just keep that in mind as we develop our program. You know, one of the things that we can all remember from the stimulus was the key word of shovel ready. And I think that that's always a challenge for an MPO because we are 5 years out usually when we award projects. But I think there might be possibilities, especially for projects that might be waiting in the wings, that we would potentially be able to strike. So if there's available money, we want to be nimble enough to get it. So I will keep you all abreast of that if we hear anything else. But that's really all I had to report on the technical side.
Thank you, Chris. Mm-hmm. MS Federal Funds Report, Mr. Poulet.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On the federal funds report, I don't have too much to talk about as far as projects getting under, being sold, getting under contract. Now that we're entering the third quarter of the fiscal year, I do expect to see some projects moving and selling. So. Really nothing much to report on in terms of projects. You'll find the funding program balances table in your handout. Once again, this has kind of been redesigned by fund type, and this is so that we can maybe keep track of each fund a little bit more accurately and the balances that we have for each type of fund. I rolled this out the last meeting and haven't heard any negative feedback, so I'm just assuming that this will work okay. And that leads me to my next point. And if you look at your sheet that has the TAP funding, the Transportation Alternative Funding, in fiscal year 2019, because some projects moved around, we don't have any projects at this time. And if you have anything that you can move up, please let us know. Otherwise, we'll have to maybe trade some of that money to another MPO so we don't lose it. But if you do have anything, any project that you can move into 2019, please let us know. And the Funding Policy Subcommittee met yesterday. We're probably going to meet one more time, and we're slowly grinding through our funding policies, and we'll probably roll out all the changes to you during the March meetings, and then we'll probably have a workshop where we can discuss the changes in April, and then we'll probably ask for approval in May or July. So that's all I have on funding at this time. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to take them. Yes?
If anybody just want to say, I think the change is great. Thank you very much for doing it. It makes it much more clear.
Okay. You're welcome.
No further questions? Moving on to old business, the final congestion management process report.
Amy. Hello. I was here last month with a draft of the congestion management report, and over the past month there has been absolutely very minimal changes, a couple of misspelled words, a couple of map numbers that were numbered wrong, but other than that, nobody seemed to have any other additional comments. So we just made a few grammatical changes in the report, a few corrections. We had one set of tables that were in the wrong chapter of the table of contents. But other than that, those changes have been made, and so I request your approval of this document.
Is there a motion?
Dave, I move to approve.
Is there a second?
Cleary.
Motion and second. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Next, we have the 2013 traffic crash report. Mr. Poulet, once again.
Okay, thank you. Today I'm pleased to present the 2013-2015 crash report. During my presentation, we'll look at some trends, talk a little bit about the new methodology, which is partially why it's a little bit later than it normally is. We'll look at some of the high crash sections and intersections. We'll touch on bicycle and pedestrian safety. We have something new in this report called Safety Performance Measures, and then we'll review the ODOT safety program. Unfortunately, crashes in 2015 inched up a little bit. We had 780 more crashes in 2015. Injuries remained nearly the same, but as you can see by the red line, the thousands of daily vehicle miles traveled also inched up. So in essence, what's happening is people are driving more, but they're crashing more also. Unfortunately, fatalities also inched up. We had 8 additional fatalities in 2015. This trend is happening statewide and nationwide. People working in the safety, traffic safety profession just aren't sure why. Guesses are distracted and impaired driving, and now with when we think of impaired driving, we always think of alcohol, but now it's a lot of drugs that are impairing people. The new methodology, I just want to touch on this because I did a presentation on this in our December meeting, but I just want to quickly review it. Our new methodology now uses GIS. What we do is we plot the crashes instead of working with them in a spreadsheet. The coordinates come with the crash data. But just plotting them is not enough. We also had to set up a network of intersections and segments, and we did that on all of our classified highways plus other locations that I knew were high crash areas. This is an example of Garrettsville. There's nothing special about Garrettsville other than it looks nice on a slide. It's a nice size. But if you just plot the crashes, this is what it looks like. I mean, it just really doesn't tell you too much. You can maybe see in this area there's something going on, but it doesn't really, you really can't come up with any kind of evaluation from just looking at this. So what we had to do was we had to draw these 250-foot radiuses around every intersection, and then we had to put a little buffer zone on each segment. And we did that so we could, in essence, capture the crashes that happened at these areas. And you can see in here, it looks like there might be something going on. And at this altitude, it's still hard to tell. But if you zoom in, see each intersection has an ID, and each segment has an ID. So in essence, what GIS does is it'll tell us like how many crashes happened in GTD 8, and that's pretty much how we did the whole area. It was very challenging. It was challenging setting up this in GIS because we had over 3,000 locations we had to set up an ID. And then once we started working with the data, we found that a lot of them were not located properly. And then it was kind of challenging to determine, to kind of identify those. Finally came up with a method that works pretty well. Intersection and non-intersection crashes were sometimes hard to kind of distinguish, and freeway interchanges were very challenging because for some odd reason, no matter where the crash happened, they always had it located just right in the center of the interchange. And then crashes referenced to an address sometimes would fall out of kind of like away from the highway. Like these are all crashes. This is Waterloo Road. These are all crashes referenced to an address. And for some reason, the coordinates put the crash at the location of the building instead of out here where it really happened. So there were some challenges. And in essence, what this led to was just lots of checking. We had to do lots of checking with the data. Once we got through that part of it, the rest of it kind of remained the same. We had a list of high crash criteria that we applied to it. For sections, it was 10 crashes per mile per year and a minimum crash rate of 1. And for intersections, it was 10 crashes and a minimum crash rate of 1. After that, a composite score was calculated. That was based on total number of crashes, the crash rate, and the severity index. And depending on like where the location ranked for each of those, then it kind of had a final composite score calculated. There were 175 highway sections. Those are listed in Table 1 of the crash memorandum. No big surprises. These five seem to come up periodically. Many of these were in the top five last time, maybe in a slightly different order. The good news is the first two have projects that are not planned but are actually started already. So we're hoping the first two eventually drop off this list. There were 308 intersections that met the minimum criteria. Those are in Table 2 of the crash memo. Once again, really no big surprises. I think we're in the top five last time, except for one, and that's South Broadway and Mill Street. For some reason, this one rose to the top, and I don't have a good explanation at this point as to why. But that's maybe the only surprise I had with the intersection list. Freeways are evaluated by ODOT. They rank them by where they're located in rural areas and urban areas. They cut the freeway up into 10th-mile segments, and then each segment is evaluated. And they only consider the top 50 rural areas and the top 50 urban areas. And 13 locations in the AMATS area made those top 50 lists. And fortunately, two or three of those already have projects underway. So Main and Broadway was one of those locations, and that area is being changed right now. So hopefully some of those locations will also improve. Bicycle and pedestrian crashes, AMATS is trying to look at these a little closer. They have some peculiar characteristics. High percentage of injuries. Bike crashes have 83% of those have an injury, and 88% of pedestrians have injuries. They're more random and spread out. You can't this segment or this intersection is the worst, because if you map them, they're just kind of random. You can maybe come up with a corridor, but they're just they happen more random. They usually involve children. There's many children involved in these, and when you start looking at the reports, you can find that one of the reasons these happen is just it seems like bike riders, pedestrians, and drivers sometimes just don't know the rules that that they need to follow. So education is a very effective measure with these type of crashes. Fortunately, bike crashes have gone down in the last 3 years. We had 26 fewer crashes in 15, 18 fewer injuries, and 20 just one fatality, but which is one too many. But that's the good news is bike crashes are coming down, and once again, I don't know exactly why. I'm just glad it is. But unfortunately,
there has been more education out there, though, right?
It could be. This is a graph of bike ages of people involved in bike crashes, and as you can see, it's real heavy toward the 9 to 19 age group. So it's a lot of younger people involved. Bike crashes happen a lot. Most of them, 67% of them, happen at intersections. It's a lot of times when you look at the reports, it's bike riders not stopping or obeying a signal and blowing through an intersection, and also it's vehicles turning into them. Pedestrian-related crashes, unfortunately, have gone up. We saw a decrease, 23 additional pedestrian-related crashes. And unfortunately, four additional fatalities. So maybe people are walking now more than riding. I'm not sure why, but unfortunately, pedestrian crashes have gone up some. Here's the age of pedestrians. As you can see, it's the teenage group seems to be real high as far as being involved in these type of crashes. And they happen pretty much everywhere at intersections and mid-block. Many times at intersections, the vehicle turns into a pedestrian, or the pedestrian is crossing the street against the signal. And then many times these happen at night. It's really hard to see a pedestrian at night, and unfortunately, a lot of people wear black, which makes it. Makes it, or dark clothing, which makes it even more difficult to see. Safety performance measures. Now, this is something new. This is a new federal requirement for the state and for MPOs. What we have to do is establish targets and then future improvement goals are measured against these targets. We had five areas that we had to set these up on or set that we had to look at, and what we did is average the last 5 years of data to come up with these targets. And then future improvements or future evaluations then will be measured against these targets. So this is something new, and we're all kind of working to it, through it together. We're also supposed to try to set up the goals that we, like a 1 or 2% improvement, but those we don't really have established yet. ODOT safety program, you're probably all pretty much aware of what ODOT has to offer. Probably one of the best in the country, over $100 million, it's up for grabs on any public road. Applications due April 30th and September 30th. Funding available for studies, design, and construction. And those requests can be anywhere from 50 to 5 million. I've even seen it above 5 million. And the local match, it's really a good deal because the local match is usually just 10%. So concluding, yeah, things are up a little bit. Crashes are up a little bit, but then so is driving. All the locations in your tables are eligible for the ODOT Highway Safety Improvement Funding. Locations in the tables also help with scoring when you apply to us for projects. And these locations will be sorted by community, so you don't have to go through. You can look at your own particular community. We'll have them posted online in that order. So if there's any questions, I'd be glad to try to answer those. Mike?
Now that the area has built roundabouts and people are becoming more, I hope, comfortable with using roundabouts, are you able to go back with the safety studies prior to and start making comparisons as to they've been functioning for a while to start concluding the safety aspect of installing those in the area, region?
I probably could. You mean at specific locations?
Well, there's specific locations we built them.
Yeah, it would probably be best to go to places where they built them to get data, right?
I probably could. A lot of times, though, one thing that I've noticed is what you have at roundabouts sometimes, because they're relatively new, is you may not have less accidents. Usually you do have less accidents, but not necessarily. But what you do is you have less severe accidents. Like you might have a minor rear end grab instead of an ankle grab.
Well, and that's what would be cool to plot is before, immediately after, and after it's been, people are accustomed to driving it, just to start in our own region, see how our drivers are doing. Because when roundabouts first started becoming popular, you heard about how safe they are in other communities. Well, with our drivers, how has that changed over the range of time that you're tracking? That would be
interesting. Perhaps I can do that sometime and present that data.
Amy, do you want to speak on that?
Yeah, there is definitely a learning curve. We're not going to have the crashes as people are entering. There's a failure to yield, which we noticed in the beginning. Everybody thinks they have the right way. They don't treat it as a true intersection. I think that's true on both the intersections. One that's in the reminder bill, ordering right on Winfield, they had an increase, less severe accident, but they have an increase in accidents. Ours was still in construction, so it wasn't fully open, and we had an abundance of accidents. Once we fully opened it, got rid of all the barrels in the area. We've now been open a couple months, but we have had three accidents. Two of those occurred in the first week of opening.
Well, I can tell you, the east side of Penn State, on Powder Mill Road in the summer, they put in a small roundabout.
Yes.
And that seems to help with congestion out there. And I believe the only big problem is the big trucks can't make it to get around it, you know, the satellite. But as far as the cars, it's really been a help out there. As far as congestion, and there really hasn't been, I don't believe there's been that many accidents, but it would be a good thing to study because that's been open for a couple of years now.
In most of our accidents, the fault driver is not completely a heavy education campaign. And when you actually look at it, most of them are neighboring communities or outside community that are actually monitoring and hitting our drivers.
You know, Dave.
I get that educational. Education is key.
And Dave, maybe what we could do just is pick, you know, three of the existing roundabouts at the intersection area and just take a look at, you know, where they've been over the past and provide that information to this group. So I think it would be helpful.
And maybe to be fair, your point is to not include that first year after opening, start looking at year two and on, or maybe not even year 6 months, whatever you think is fair.
But, well, like, but if you include that year,
it would probably get to see the relationship.
You want to see
terribly,
how long it takes for drivers to become accustomed to them. And the more we build in the area, how less that factor occurs as you build roundabouts. So all the data, I think, would be interesting to analyze.
Any other questions? Answer?
Thank you, sir.
I think it was most required.
Yeah. Yes. Okay. Is there a motion to accept the report?
So moved, thank you.
Is there a second?
Please wait a second.
Motion second. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. On to new business. It's a draft of fiscal year 2018 Transportation Planning Work Program and Budget. Mr. Garner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attachment 5A in your packet. Annually, the EMS Policy Committee adopts the work program and budget for the upcoming fiscal year. The fiscal year begins July 1st. The work program identifies the staff planning activities that will take place in the upcoming fiscal year and describes the funding sources that will be used to pay for those. The MS budget is provided by a grant from the USDOT and is overseen by ODOT. Funding is matched. The federal share is 80%. ODOT provides 10%, and the members of the MS policy committee provide the remaining 10%. ODOT is providing its annual consolidated planning grant funds for this year in the amount of just under $1.2 million, approximately $162,000 in local share dues requested in order to fund a total budget of about $2 million for metropolitan planning, which is slightly more than last year's budget. A draft of the FY 2018 work program will be submitted to ODOT and the Federal Highway Administration for their review and comment at the end of February. The final work program and budget will be presented to the Policy Committee in May, this May. The major elements of the work program include soliciting applications for new projects using SPP and 202 funds, implementing the newly approved in May 2040 Regional Transportation Plan, maintaining the newly approved TIP as amended, and integrating a variety of performance measures as part of the planning process. The staff will also continue the annual traffic counting program as well as our safety studies. Staff is requesting approval of the first draft of the fiscal year 2018 work program budget.
Thank you. If there are no questions, is there a motion to approve?
Dave White, move to approve.
Second.
Tomasi, second.
Motion made and second. Any further discussion? Seeing none. All those in favor, let them say aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Next, we have a fiscal year 2018 to 2021 TIP. It's the first draft projects list. Mr. Poulet.
Okay, thank you. Well, we're developing our next TIP. It's the 2018-21 Transportation Improvement Program, and attachment 5B is not the entire CIP is just simply the table H3, the list of projects, and it is a draft list at this time. Some highlights: there's $354.1 million in our list of highway improvements, and $318.1 million in transit projects. And once again, that includes all funding sources. So, like a lot of the transit projects, you know, they have other sources of income, but that's total funding. Some significant projects, a couple I'd like to just mention, and these are ODOT projects, but the one that I'm kind of excited about is the State Route 8 bridge replacement over the little, that's the big Route 8 bridge over the little Cuyahoga River in North Street is $142.6 million. Reconstruction of part of the central interchange, $68.6 million. State Route 8 between Graham Road and State Route 303 will have a total pavement reconstruction done at $53.7 million. And then reconstruction of the I-76 Worcester Road interchange at 27.7. Those were just four of the top projects in terms of cost. And some important dates to remember, we have to submit the first draft to ODOT February 3rd. There'll be a two-week public comment period where we'll have some public meetings between March 27th and April 7th. Then the final document gets submitted to ODOT April 28th. Then I'm hoping to have the policy committee approve it May 25th, and then FHWA and FTA approves it in June. So it's a process. And I guess at this point in time, I just would like you to look at it and make sure that your projects are included for the transit people. Make sure your projects are also included in the transit table. And if there's any discrepancies or anything you feel isn't right, just please give us a call. And if there's any questions I can answer at this time, I'd be glad to.
Seeing none, there's a motion required for this.
Any white move this
minute? Is there a second?
Just a second.
Motion and second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor, let the number saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same side. Motion carries. The draft of Transportation Outlook 2040 list recommendations. Mr. Baker.
All right, so what we wanted to get in front of you today, this is just for discussion purposes, and really it's more just to get it on your radar, is that in May we will be approving our long-range transportation plan, Transportation Outlook 2040. In March, in our next meeting, you'll be provided with a draft of that. One of the things that we do, and the requirement of the long-range plan, is to make recommendations, transportation recommendations, that we think will be seen between now and 2040. A key to that is the requirement that they have to be fiscally constrained. So we cannot just put a list, a wish list together of every project we'd like to see. We do have to limit the projects. The positive thing is that if you have a project that is a preservation project, a safety project, or an operational project, it does not need to be listed in the plan itself. It's considered consistent with the plan. We still list some of those projects because we want to show a robust list to the federal government when we put the plan together. The projects that absolutely must be listed in the plan is any capacity-adding projects. If you have any intent to add additional capacity to a roadway, it must be identified on the plan. We must analyze it for air quality impacts. And it must be, basically, the feds have to concur with our air quality findings that the environmental issues will not be greater than the potential for the project. So what we wanted to do was to get that in front of you to see your list. Also, if there are projects that you don't see on here, but and maybe they're consistent, but you think that they deserve some prominence or you want them to be on the plan, please let us know. One of the things that we do struggle with, though, is showing that we have enough funding to fund all our recommendations. The lists in front of you today are culminated from the reports that we've done. So we've pulled projects from our congestion report, our safety report, our bike and ped reports, and our freight report to identify corridors and projects that we think have potential. What we would really encourage all of you to do over the next 2 weeks is review these projects. Think of ones that you think are substantial that maybe should be on there that aren't, and provide us any feedback that you have. Like I said, March we will actually be unveiling, hopefully, a fiscally constrained list. So it's very critical for us to get that information from you. And what we will be doing in the next couple weeks as well is reaching out to members for communities that do have multiple projects, especially making sure that, hey, are these the projects you want? Are these ones you think you're going to build, et cetera, et cetera. Finally, on the one with transit, we typically work directly with the transit agencies to develop the list. So that's why transit's not on here. Typically, we do that kind of separate. And then the bike and ped, a lot of that comes through the lists of our bike and pedestrian plan that we completed and was approved last year. That's probably the area where fiscal constraint is the most difficult because we do have a limited amount of funding for trails, and we might not be able to show every project that's identified even on the list that we've provided today. So I would say, as we will be reaching out to you to find out more about which projects we think, and really what we're trying to do, because of fiscal constraint, we really end up calling and saying, which projects do we think are going to start development in the next 5 to 10 years? Those are the ones we want to have identified. So that's the purpose of this first list. Please, you know, email feedback either directly to me or to Jeff Gardner or Dave Poulet on our staff. They will be kind of putting all these lists together and making sure that we've got them vetted. We also might be calling to say, hey, what do you think ballpark cost is going to be for this project as we try to grow put in our fiscal constraint? One of the challenges with fiscal constraint is that we do have to show the project in year of expenditure dollars, which means we actually set an inflation rate, a yearly inflation rate. So a project that is $5 million today, if we don't show it being built until 2035, it's probably going to cost closer to $7 million or something like that. So it's a very detail-oriented process with very little benefit, to be quite honest, but it's something the federal government requires us to do. So with that, what I would just ask is please review these. Please get in touch with us. As we refine the list, we will be sending it out, possibly even you might get a mailing from us that's not mail-out related but might just say, here's a draft list, here are estimated costs, please provide feedback. This is, we're required to do this plan every 4 years. As you know, we've been working on the inputs to this document for the last 4 years. Between now and May is AMAT's busiest time of making sure we're checking all the boxes, we're writing the document, and we're also putting together a list of projects. So, we thank you for your cooperation and look forward to making sure that we can get those critical infrastructure projects we need on our plan and then eventually funded. So if there are any questions about it, kind of big picture, but I would ask you to just, especially as a technical committee, review the list and give us some feedback if you think there are some things that really deserve some additional attention. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Moving on to resolutions. Resolution 217-01, approving amendment number 10 to the transportation improvement program, fiscal year 2016-2019. They had three projects and revised the schedule and funding to one project. Mr. Poulet.
Okay, thank you. Attachment 6A is amendment number 10 to our current TIP. This does include new projects, but they're not new projects. They're not new projects. They're projects that were programmed out in further years and are being pulled into this TIP. Those three projects are Center Road East and Center Road West in New Franklin. Those are resurfacing projects. Those are $800,000 each. And another resurfacing project is Cleveland Maslin Road in Barberton. This is resurfacing from the South Court line to 31st Street. This is a pretty small project at using $161,000 of SGB funds. Also with the Cleveland Maslin Road project is a very minor safety project being done in Barberton. This is at the corner of Worcester Road North and Hopkinton Avenue. It's kind of a real strange angle at that intersection, and the city received $76,000 in safety funds to do some restriping. So that will also be included with this project. The next project is in the TIP, but it's being moved from fiscal year 19 to fiscal year 17, and that is Cyberlink Way Phase 1. Will be the last of the Goodyear projects, and it is being moved up to 17. If there's any questions, I'd be glad to answer them.
Question.
Yes.
Department projects.
Yes.
I mentioned this to Chris.
Yeah, we talked about it. Yeah.
I thought 31st Street was Cleveland Maslin.
Okay. You know what I did? I thought you might ask that. You are correct. 31st Street is Cleveland Maslin Road, but then at this point, this becomes 31st Street, and this becomes Cleveland Maslin. And Barberton has it's going to be, I think, from this court line up to where those split apart.
I have a bridge on there that I want to make sure that we don't put an extra dead load on, because I'm asking.
Okay.
I wasn't sure the location was part of the project.
Any other questions?
No further questions. Is there a motion to approve the resolution?
You might move to approve.
Is there a second?
Second.
Motion and second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same side. Motion carries. Next we have resolution 2017-02, approving amendment number 11, to transportation improvement program. This will be years 2016-19, and add ODOT awarded OTPP funds and fiscal year 2017 for Metro RTA and part of Mr. Garner.
Attachment 6B in your mail out. This resolution seeks to add recently awarded federal funds to the TIP for Metro and Parkland in fiscal year 2017. ODOT is awarding these funds through its Ohio Transit Preservation Partnership Program. These are ODOT attributable highway funds that are being flexed over for transit use. Metro is requesting the addition of $2 million in federal funds in fiscal year 2017. Part of their annual preventive maintenance budget. These funds will be used to maintain their vehicle fleet as well as their bus facilities and transfer locations. Part of it is requesting the addition of $171,000 in federal funds in fiscal year 2017 for the purchase of three small buses. These funds are also awarded through the ODOT OTPP program. And lastly, part of it is requesting an amendment to their preventive maintenance budget in fiscal year 2017 to accommodate a change in the type of federal funds that are being used. The total project cost remains the same at $1,287,000. And the staff is requesting approval of resolution 2017-02. Are there any questions?
See none. Is there a motion?
Second
one. Motion and second. Any further discussion? Hearing none. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Resolution 2017-03, concurrence for the revised air quality conformity analysis for the Acton Canton air quality non-attainment area to the amended I-480 deck project to the NOAACA long range transportation plan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Attachment 6C includes a summary of the proposed amendment to NOAACA's long-range transportation plan in 2016-19 TIF to include a bridge project sponsored by ODOT on I-480 over the Cuyahoga River Valley, extending from I-77 to Transportation Boulevard in Cuyahoga County. Since AMATs and NOAACA are within the Cleveland-Akron 8-County Air Quality Non-Attainment Area, a transportation conformity analysis is required for the amendment of regionally significant projects that add capacity to the region's transportation system. NOAACA has prepared conformity analysis for its amendment that includes three conformity tests for the 8-hour ozone standard and fine particulate matter in 2.5 air quality standards that are shown in the attached Exhibit 1. The results of the air quality analysis demonstrate that NOAACA's amended project will not interfere with conformity status in the Cleveland-Akron non-attainment area. This resolution establishes AMAD's concurrence with NOAACA's air quality analysis to amend the I-480 bridge deck project in Cuyahoga County. With that, the staff recommends approval of this resolution. Are there any questions?
Seeing none, is there a motion?
Dave White, you do move.
Kim McCleary, second.
Motion and second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those not in favor, same sign. Motion carries. Is there any other business on the floor? None? Motion to adjourn. Motion second.
Second.
All those in favor of adjournment?
Aye.
All those in favor.